Hey everyone, it's Lydia here. Before we jump into this episode, I want to give a little bit of an explanation because the topic might feel a little bit left field than what we're normally talking about. Shannon dropped into my inbox with a topic that I hadn't thought about at all for the podcast, but when she said it, I was like, oh, okay, I can really relate to that. And I think a lot of you will too. She is a minimalist professional organizer. She brought up a topic which actually I think affects all of us in the weird years. It's this quarter-life crisis of accumulation. Suddenly we look around in our late 20s and our 30s and we have so much stuff. We have boxes of memories from trips with friends or maybe ex-boyfriends. Old university course books which were so expensive that it seems insane to get rid of them. And then there's the stuff that we accumulated when we were trying to be the best versions of ourselves. The workout bands, the juicers, the bloody spiralizer that everyone got at some point. And the thing about stuff, the thing about possessions, is that it's so closely tied to our view of self. I surround myself with books that reflect the way that I think, or my wardrobe is full of clothes from the various versions of myself. I've got my corporate business girl, which I don't have to crack out that much anymore, thank God. I've also got my cute, you know, exploring the city outfits. I've got my being in the DJ booth, all black outfits. They're all reflections of versions of me, and they're all stuff. Stuff can almost be our external world of identity. But more and more of us live in rented homes. The average age of buying a house in the UK is 34. So congratulations to anyone listening who got there early. I personally didn't, and I'm sure a lot of the people listening didn't. But what do you do when suddenly your accumulation of life is overspilling from drawers because we're living in these rented spaces with, let's be honest, not enough storage? And how do you decide to part with things? And what do you part with when so many objects hold parts of your identity and they also have emotions wrapped up in them? Shannon shares her experience as a decluttering expert. We talk about why objects do hold so much emotional control over us sometimes. We talk about how difficult it is to let go of those. And we also talk about the loop between consumption and always purchasing and then the need to declutter and how to hopefully break that loop. Hopefully, like me, this is a part of the weird years which was just under the surface and I hadn't really stopped to think about. I hope you enjoy it and let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Shannon, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to have you here because you actually messaged me about this. And it's firstly so nice that anyone is listening. I'm always like, is anyone out there? But also when people hear the podcast and they're like, oh, this is cool. I have something to contribute, you know, to the conversation. When I heard what you're doing, I was like, oh my God, this is so relevant and feels so timely and like something I need myself. Can you give me a little kind of overview of what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a minimalist minded professional organizer and basically I help people to declutter their homes. I also help businesses and do a bit of public speaking, but yeah, mainly I'm helping people to go through their possessions, work out what they do and don't want to keep. And I also help people with their mindset around their consumption because it's really important that we look at that as well. A lot of people just will go into people's homes, help them declutter, and then that's it. It's like, there you go, there's your new space. But actually, if we don't look at our mindset around what we're buying and bringing into our homes, then ultimately we're going to end up back in the same place that we started.
Right. So do you just have an incredibly minimalist, empty, perfect house that would put me to shame?
It's quite minimal. It's quite calm. But actually, like, obviously, I own stuff and I need things. But everything I bring in, I'm quite considered. But I think I've learned recently that I'm actually quite naturally a messy person. Like, I leave my clothes on the floor. But when I go to tidy up, it's a lot quicker and easier because I'm not dealing with an abundance of stuff.
Maybe I'm wrong on this, but it feels like you're either a messy person or you're not. And maybe it comes from like how you grew up. I mean, my husband is like super, super clean. Like he's made me a more tidy person. So I really appreciate that because I definitely grew up with a lot of stuff around me. Does that kind of ring true to you? Like, what was your relationship with things when you were younger?
Yeah. So I think a lot of us grow up wanting to buy stuff. I really felt like I wanted to have shopping sprees and to bring in loads of things into my life as a kid because I'd watched all those films, those kind of chick flick, I don't know, like young teenage films where there's women walking around with designer bags and carrier bags and they're walking down the streets and they're buying stuff. And so I always wanted to go and do that sort of thing. And I once asked my dad for my birthday to take me to Claire's Accessories to have a shopping spree and to buy me loads of what on reflection is just tat. But yeah, I thought that was the best thing ever. And my mum really struggled with letting go of things from her childhood and the way she was brought up. And I find this quite a lot is when people have been brought up with not very much, they seem to want to accumulate more and they have a fear of letting things go. And so every time I tried to declutter as a child, she'd want to hold on to things and go through what I was trying to let go of as to whether it had memories or financial value. And so it wasn't encouraged to really declutter. And yeah, I spent my early 20s just accumulating more and more. I went to uni and was buying loads of shoes and clothes and had all of these things. And then it wasn't until I watched a documentary that I changed my mindset around my consumption and went the other direction.
Okay, I feel like we might have seen the same documentary because I also saw one that changed my life for about 6 months. So I was very committed for those 6 months. But I want to go back to that thing on like childhood and the, I guess, the patterns around ownership. Because I don't know if you've seen this, this advert for a bank. Obviously, it's not that good because I can't remember what the bank is. But they were talking about how your relationship with money starts as young as six, I think they said.
Yes.
I was like, that's so interesting because I don't think my mum grew up with much money. Like they definitely weren't wealthy. Mm. So it was all very much like kind of scrimping and saving. And when I grew up, she's very much an environmentalist, which is an amazing thing. But it's like when we were younger, like nothing could be thrown away. So it was that, okay, well, this piece of wood could go on the fire or this thing can go down the jumble sale or this goes to the charity shop, this goes to a certain recycling. We had boxes and boxes of recycling that couldn't go in your everyday recycling that had to go somewhere else. And it just meant I kind of lived around this accumulation of stuff myself. I mean, me and my siblings take the piss because we'll be like, oh, mum, do you have a potato peeler? And you'll open the drawer and there'll be 15 potato peelers. And four of them don't work. Four of them are broken. But she's like, oh, but I'm going to fix them. You know, It's almost like that, as you said, that thing of letting go. It's like, maybe it's around money. Maybe it's about sentiment. It's also like maybe a gratefulness and like not wanting to waste anything.
I think it's generational as well.
Yeah,
there's generations of people who grew up with very little and that whole, I think wartime, it's the whole like
definitely
make do and mend. And then we've kind of, the generation below us is very much like TikTok shop, stuff from China. It's very over consumption. And we're kind of in this middle ground of we've been brought up a certain way. We're also seeing that the environmental impact it has. So we're kind of in a strange section of people in terms of accumulation and being conscious of the environment.
As you said, now you've got teenagers who, I mean, TikTok shop is like, it's all stuff from China, right? It's like Temu, Shein, TikTok shop. This idea of how much you can consume for such a low amount of money as well is kind of terrifying.
Yeah, it's awful.
You think about like, you know, the age group. I think there's value in expression through things. And I think expression through things can be like, you know, what you have in your home. It can be when you're younger, what you have in your bedroom. I mean, I grew up in Brighton and like it was a big thing when we were younger, we'd go on like shopping trips. Probably when we were like, I don't know, 13, 14.
Yeah.
And you'd have maybe like £25 and you go down the lanes and you pick out all these little trinkets or we used to go to this store called Athena. I think it's in most shopping malls. It'd be like an HMV and an Athena. And Athena would do things like posters. And I had loads of posters. I actually had a poster of like the Playboy Bunny logo on my wall when I was about 13, which now I look back, I'm like, that's fucking bizarre that my parents didn't tell me to take that down. I just saw like the black and pink bunny and I was like, I love it. But it was such a, like, it felt like a ritual of working out like who I was through the things that I gathered around me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But sometimes when you think about, oh, this is very me, this is going to be me, it's very strange because like a watch, you can get a watch for £10, you can get a watch for like £100,000, but it's the way that it's advertised or the lifestyle it's trying to sell to you determines whether that's aspirational enough for you. And so it's like, I want to buy into this lifestyle. And that's how we're marketed to, is they sell you the lifestyle rather than the physical item the majority of the time.
That's so true. I mean, cars is a really good example, because when we got our first car, as a couple, me and my husband, my dad was like, you should get a Volvo because they're really, like, they just last forever. They're amazing, a Volvo. And I was like, Dad, I'm not fucking driving a Volvo. I was like, that's not sexy in any way. Like, I don't want to, I'm not in my Volvo years. Like, yeah, but it is actually completely tied into this whole network of consumerism and projecting, mm-hmm. as you said, who you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like in being in the world of minimalism, you almost have to detach and be like, I don't give a fuck what things say about me?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a balance. I actually went to uni to study fashion. So, yeah, which feels like that would have led me down a completely different
totally.
Route.
Totally. That's literally like the epitome of having things to express yourself.
Yeah. Like. And I'm a very creative person. And I think, like most people, you want to present yourself a certain way. But there's a bit of a balance. I think you can buy quality over quantity is one direction to go. So it's not saying don't ever buy anything luxury, don't ever buy anything expensive. You've right. got to be frugal. It's about just being really conscious about what you're buying and why you're buying it. So try and buy once a high quality piece that's going to last a long time, rather than 50 pieces off of Shein that's going to fall apart and
yeah,
those sorts of things.
It's tricky because in my head I'm like, I personally wouldn't buy from Shein, or like I try and avoid. I think for me it's all the stories of like the production, and I think I struggle with the idea that of heavy exploitation. I mean, unfortunately we live in a world where lots of things we buy exploit a certain group,
mm-hmm.
but it feels like those are like ultra exploitation of mainly women in mm-hmm. like developing countries. But then there's also this whole conversation around, is it a real like privilege, and is it elitist to buy less and buy best. Quality?
Mm-hmm.
Because to buy, say, a wool jumper, right, like a nice wool jumper,
mm-hmm.
you'll probably be looking at like 50 quid, mm-hmm. I'd say. And you can buy something that looks like that from mm-hmm. Shein mm-hmm. or from Zara or whatever, and it will be 15. Like, that's kind of difficult.
Okay, but who actually buys off Shein? And it's people who have a middle income, so have a disposable income.
Right.
Women in their 30s to 40s, I think it was. So not who you are thinking is buying off Shein, and it's not out of desperation. I'm very aware that there are people who are really struggling and can't afford to buy certain things, and buying things from like Primark is their only option. But the majority of customers of these sorts of places are people who has the income to buy things of a higher quality. And also, like the wool jumper, you could get a 100% wool jumper off of Vinted for like half the price that you would have paid full price for.
Yeah.
And there's enough clothing in our world for the next six generations if we stop production now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we don't need to like buy new.
There's enough clothing in the world. If we stop production now, we'd still have enough for the next six generations.
Yeah.
That's actually terrifying.
Mm. Have you seen like in the kind of seas of clothes in Ghana?
I have.
The abundance is ridiculous. But you can buy stuff secondhand so easily. It's becoming more and more accessible.
Mm.
Of really high quality pieces that are hardly worn for like a quarter of the price. So,
and also, I guess, examining why you buy things, because I have really noticed this in myself, is like when I'm having a bit of a shit time, like if I don't feel good in myself, I definitely default to like shopping.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so bizarre to see that behavior in myself, who I think I'm like quite I'm quite connected with my thoughts. I'm quite conscious in what I do. But then I'll just have like a shit time and I'm suddenly on, you know, a website and I'm buying stuff. And then by the time it arrives, sometimes I'm like, and this is awful, I'm like, I don't even remember that I bought that. And it comes and I'm like, fuck, I'm probably going to send it back now because I don't feel that need for the gratification anymore.
Yeah. And I do the same. And, you know, this is my career.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I've got myself to a point where I don't hit checkout. But yeah, late at night, I'll be like scrolling on Vinted, or I randomly found myself a couple of months ago, I saw an advert on Instagram for these tiny little ceramic pots, like tiny, miniature. And I saw them and I was like, oh my God, they're really cute. They look nice on my mantelpiece. And I found myself like 10 minutes later, scrolling through them all, picking which one, putting them in my checkout. And then I caught myself and was like, what am I doing? Like, these aren't gonna, they're just gonna sit on the shelf collecting dust. And like, they'll probably turn up and I'll be like, why did I spend £30 on that? But it's, yeah, it's so common. And it's because we've kind of been marketed to that buying X, Y, and Z will bring us happiness, will make our lives better or easier. But the reality is, the majority of the stuff we buy is going to have a fleeting dopamine hit. And then we'll be looking for that again very quickly.
Yeah. I just finished reading this book. I think it was called The Practice of Not Thinking. I think it was called that. It's a translation from a Japanese book about this guy who used to be a Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. And now he's not a monk anymore. He still like lives by a lot of the principles. And he talks about this thing of when objects own you versus when you own objects. Mm-hmm. And you probably know loads about this, but it's like this idea that anything you have takes up a tiny place in your mind.
Yeah.
The knowledge that you own it takes up a place. So even that, like, okay, I have a handbag. Where is the handbag? Well, I know it's in this drawer under my bed. Okay, if I take the handbag somewhere, I know it has a value. I don't want to scratch the handbag. I don't want to leave the handbag somewhere. And he says that basically everything that you own has this tiny little thread into your conscious. So the more things you own, the more you're like juggling the knowledge of stuff, mm-hmm. and the less clear your mind is.
Yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I'd like to read that. But the minimalists have something kind of similar where they say when you're thinking about buying something, asking yourself, am I willing to look after this? Am I willing to maintain this? Am I willing to give up a space in my home for it? You know, how much care is it going to take to clean it, to dust it, to fix it if it goes wrong? Ask yourself all of these questions before you bring something in. And that's what I do, because my home has kind of become my sanctuary, and my place to relax. And by bringing stuff in, for me, I'm affected by my surroundings.
Mm.
Some people, you know, it doesn't matter to them. But for me, if my surroundings feel cluttered and don't feel calm, I can't focus or relax. And so, yeah, I always think, is this going to end up ultimately? Like air fryers, like everyone's got an air fryer and everyone keeps saying to me, you need to get one. Like you'll never use your oven again. And I'm like, but that's going to sit on my kitchen counter and I've spent 32 years not needing an air fryer.
I think air fryers are shit. I really do. I know like people will come for me for that, but yeah, they're great if you're doing like chips and chicken nuggets. Fantastic. Yeah. But if you want to make anything other than that, and I know this because my grandma is obsessed with her air fryer and like she, every time I go around, she's like, come down, look at my air fryer. I'm like, I've seen it. But she will try and make you a stir fry in it. And I can tell you, a stir fry should not be made in an air fryer. Like, absolutely. It's not the right medium for a stir fry.
The one thing I like to talk about is spiralizers.
Oh, yeah. That was such a, like, God, like 5 years ago thing, right?
Yeah, but this is the thing. So air fryers are the thing at the moment. And walking pads. I actually was looking at walking pads last night. I was like, maybe I'll get a walking pad because that's like the new exercise. That's like, it's literally like, even as a minimalist and professional organizer, I get sucked into things. I didn't buy one. Spiralizers, it was like, this is going to turn your courgette into spaghetti and it's really healthy. And everyone went and bought spiralizers. And now, whenever I mention it, people are like, yeah, I've got one that's sat in my cupboard for like 15 years at the back. I don't use it. Air fryers or whatever it is, they're the new thing you have to get. You use them for like, realize they're not very good. And then it sits in the back of the cupboard again.
That's so true. I'm trying to think what mine are, what things I have. I think probably like loads of fitness things.
Like fitness and kitchen appliance things are kind of the majority of the fads that we go through. Yeah. Also, I don't buy things for I'm going to become that person. You know, we were kind of talking about that. Like, I was like, I'm going to get a walking pad, right? And then I was like, realistically, that's an ideal version of me, but actually, I'll probably use it for a week. You got to just be really realistic with yourself.
Yeah.
Or clothing wise, people buy stuff that I can wear that to a wedding. It's like, well, how many weddings do you go to in a year? Well, like one. And do you already have a dress that you like that you wear? Yeah. So you probably don't need that. But also, yeah, my clients will always be like, well, I might wear that when I go skiing, but actually it's quite warm. And then, but it also doesn't really fit and it's itchy. But, you know, when I go skiing, I'm like, okay, well, when did you last go skiing? 15 years ago. Are you planning to go skiing? No, because I don't really like the cold. And it's just like, and it's itchy and it doesn't fit. So are you going to wear it? Oh, no, I'm probably not going to wear it. And it's like, but we have these things in our heads of who we're going to be or what we might do. And it's all just in case I do this. And it's have a genuine, honest conversation with yourself, whether that's ever really going to happen.
That's so interesting to actually just analyze the reason why you might be buying something. Because I'm definitely guilty of, and actually my husband's worse than me. He went out and bought like full padel kits before we'd ever played padel. Some people say paddle.
Yeah.
I don't know what the answer is. Yeah. I'll say paddle because maybe I sound like a douche saying paddle. Paddle.
Yeah, but that's, yeah.
Whereas never like, played just, it in our lives.
Yeah.
Now he plays. So okay. But
he might not have, or he might have hated it. And yeah, it happens so much. And so it's kind of like runners who actually, when they were a kid, ran barefoot and now they're, you know, they're in the Olympics or whatever, but it's just starting and just do the thing. So go out and do the thing and see whether you enjoy it first and slowly build up rather than like get the full kit and then hate it. But we do that as adults, don't we?
Yeah, I guess it's like the experimentation. And I think that's one like psychological hook that it feels like we've landed on of buying for the person you want to be.
Yeah.
Probably in like, you know, the weird years, your late 20s, your 30s. I imagine that's quite a lot of what people do.
Yeah. I think we're kind of working out who we are. And also when we have kids, like you need to get this stuff because it will help your baby sleep and you need to buy this, this, this. And the baby world and the consumption around before even a child is born. My niece is 3 years old and before she was born, there's like a baby shower, then obviously the birth. That's two occasions. Then she had a christening, then her first birthday. So that's four occasions before she's one for people to buy stuff, let alone what my sister actually wanted to buy for my niece. And so she's then, and she's kind of minimalist, like she likes to keep her home quite tidy. She had all of this stuff before my niece was one, and the majority of it probably didn't even get used.
Yeah, it's like the fear of what you might need.
Yeah, but you could just go and get it. Amazon will deliver it next day if you really need it, or someone can run to the shop. Like,
yeah,
don't need this bouncy boo thing. And the, like, it doesn't, and then it's all sat online for like hardly ever used and you can get it all secondhand. And
yeah,
it's mad.
I wonder if for our generation who are renting for longer,
yeah,
how that plays in. Because I mean, we just got a storage unit, which when I say it out loud, like it sounds insane, but my husband does this thing where he keeps every box for all his music equipment. And I'm like, that's bizarre. And he says, no, it's because they have to fit back into the box because he's got, I don't know, a synth or a keyboard or whatever. But then he started doing it for things like a kettle or just random appliances that we have in the house. And I'm like, you don't need to keep the box for that.
For
when we move. And I'm like, we've had these boxes in the studio for 5 years we've lived there. We haven't moved. So for 5 years, every time I walk in, I'm like, I fucking hate seeing these boxes. So we compromised and got a storage unit, and now it's got my bike in, it's got a whole load of books in.
Sorry, so the storage unit has your boxes in, like the boxes?
Yeah, it's a storage unit full of empty boxes for when we move and we put things in the boxes. He did get rid of some of them, but yeah, I mean, that's a bizarre thing to do. No,
yeah, I mean, I try and be non-judgmental, but it's an interesting decision. So the initial thought that comes to my mind is like the cost that you are paying for a storage unit to store empty boxes. I know you said there's other bits in there, but the cost of storing these boxes versus if we just bought some boxes when we actually move and need them, if we do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, clients who have iPhone boxes and iPad boxes and laptop boxes, you know, Apple ones are the ones everyone keeps. And in case it breaks and I need to take it back to the shop, or I don't know, don't even know why people keep most of the iPad boxes, like cables. Oh my goodness, cables. Boxes and boxes of just random cables.
Yeah.
And people are like, well, I might need a cable for a kettle I threw away 5 years ago. And it's like,
yeah, 3310.
Exactly. And I just say, is everything working that's around you? Like, have you got the cables for everything that you need? Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's get rid of this. And then if you happen to discover you threw away a cable you need, you'll be able to get one.
Yeah, it's really true. I think the challenging thing with renting is like, it's looking forward to the, you know, the home that you will have. Like for me, the other thing that's in the storage unit is like, I'm a big reader and I love to have physical books. Like I do have an e-reader, but I don't love it. And I think it's because like being surrounded by books, which are a reflection of the things that I think about, for me, I find like really useful. So, you know, stuff like that goes in there, but it's kind of frustrating renting in London, at least, because there's so many places you go to see and there's like no storage whatsoever. So that, I think, puts a lot of people, I think a lot of people listening would relate to the idea of like, you know, one day we want to have a home and we don't want to get rid of everything because it's like, I want that stuff to fill this home, to feel like my space.
100%. I completely agree. And I'm sure there are specific books and things that you can't get again and that you want to keep. But it's kind of like weighing up the balance between, do we declutter some of this stuff now and either have a smaller storage unit or keep it where we are so that we can save that money towards getting that goal. The other thing that comes up is like, and I used to do this a lot, it's like that trying to get that instant gratification now of buying little bits for your home where all that money could actually go on buying the home.
That's really true. Yeah.
It's kind of like really difficult because you want to keep excited about it and to plan for that future, but you are actually pulling yourself slightly further back from being able to achieve that goal.
What's your thought on like emotional connections to things? Because I've gone back and forth on this many, many times in my life, from being like an absolute savage. I threw out all my like GCSE, you know, what are they called? Certificates.
Yeah.
And my mum was like, you can't throw those out. You might need them. I was like, I've been employed for 12 years and no one has ever asked my GCSE certificate. But there's things which are, you know, emotional that I think we all have, you know, a box of memories.
Yeah.
Where's the line though? Like I know some people who keep every birthday card they've ever had, but then sometimes you throw away things and it doesn't feel like it's as tangible to see a photo as it does to see a thing.
Yeah, no, I'm not a massive take a photo. Well, it is a suggestion to take a photo of it and then you've got that memory as a photo. And for some people that really works. And so I will always put that forward, you know, that's a potential because some people love that idea. I used to have loads of memory boxes and now I'm down to just one box and I do go through it every now and then and take
out. For your whole life?
Yeah, I mean,
wow.
But I do think about people that've got, like my mum, lofts full of stuff. And if you are never going up there and never going through it and never looking at it, what's the point of it? Whereas if you have a small box of stuff or, you know, whatever size, and you actually bring that down and you go through it and you reminisce and really enjoy those things, there's a huge difference between that. The point of memory stuff is that you can bring up those memories for yourself. And if you are just leaving it all up there and, oh, there's just so much you can't get to it, then it just seems a little bit pointless holding on to it.
God, it makes me think it's even like kind of connected to how people process changes in their lives and trauma and all that stuff. Because what you just said about it's up there, but you don't ever bring it down. It makes me think like, oh, you know, do parents sometimes keep the stuff from when we're younger? Because actually it's painful to like think of your, you know, baby, is that whole stage is completely gone. It will never come back.
Yeah. I like to use the analogy of museums don't display the artwork of the all the artists' artwork they've ever created. They curate it. And I always tell people in terms of memory stuff to curate their memory boxes. So instead of having every picture your kid ever did a splodge on, what are the really important pieces that evoke the best memories for you, and then keep those. So it's not like get rid of all the memory stuff. It's just, you know, you don't want a snotty tissue that they once blew into. You want like the really nice stuff. So like bring it down to a smaller amount. And also if you can, you know, if you are someone who loves to keep loads of memory, then say I'm going to have these five storage boxes and I can fill them. But if you kind of give yourself a limit, that can also help, rather than just being like, we've got the whole loft, we can fill up the whole space.
Also that accessibility thing's really interesting, of like, if you made them more accessible because there was less of it, maybe you'd actually enjoy those
go through it
more.
Yeah, definitely. But having attachment to stuff's really difficult, and we hold our memories and things. But it's kind of about thinking that the memory isn't in the physical item, it's in our mind. And yes, it can provoke that. I always have a weird thing about people keeping stuff that's negative, has a negative memory. I don't really understand why you'd hold on to something that has a negative memory to it. What's your thoughts on that?
I guess I wonder, like, what is, well, I'm sure there are. I'm lucky that I haven't had too many traumatic things in my life. But I think from my point of view, it makes me think of, I have a box of memories from like my first boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I still have it. And, you know, like in some ways it's a sad thing, but I think maybe things that are, at the time I remember being like, I will never not love him. I'm going to put all of this stuff in this box. And now I like to look back at it sometimes because I'm like, it's such a fond memory.
Yeah,
of being
that's,
young. I wonder if anything that you own, can you own something that only has negative memories? Because it can only have a negative memory if it meant something to you. Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to think, what would that be? Like something that was only negative.
Yeah. I mean, I've got thoughts of clients in my head, but I don't want to kind of share their stories. But yeah, people seem to hold on to stuff. So I personally, I really like to think, if it does hold a negative memory, I don't want that in my, if you believe in energies and things, I don't want that in my home. So that can sometimes be a good way of people letting go of some things if they do think that it's got a negative feeling around it. But yeah, there's plenty of stuff people hold on to from, you know, horrible relationships or traumatic times.
Wow.
And they still, yeah. And I just haven't quite got my head around why you'd want to, but some people do.
I wonder if it's also like the pain you know versus the pain you don't know, if that makes sense. Like, is there something in people want to be reminded of that bad thing almost as like a warning to themselves? And probably people would find that most of the things they have don't have any memories.
Yeah.
Books, clothes.
Yeah, I think memories, it's very important to think about you and also not hold on to stuff because you think your kids might want it.
That's such a big one. I think about all the time. Your kid might want that one day. I'm like, they won't. Trust me. This terrifying Chucky doll that's been in the roof haunting, like, they do not want that.
Yeah, I know. It's, yeah, like the tea set from grandma of five grandmas ago. Instead of feeling like we need to keep everything, it's about like, what's the really important things from their home that we want to keep, and then kind of letting go of the rest of it, because we can't just move all of their stuff from their home into our home. It's just not possible.
Especially as half the things in my mum's loft are probably mine from when I was a teenager. So I'm already in
all
debt.
Of my art books will be going out the door when when the time comes.
So if someone's listening to this and they're thinking, you know, I actually want to declutter, and I think it would give me more kind of mental clarity and, you know, just relax me a bit, what would you say are like the first easy steps that someone can do?
So there's two options. You either think about where it's going to make the most impact for you. So where is the place that's really, really bothering you the most? So for some people, that's like their bedroom. Some people, it's the kitchen. But where is the place where you're like, oh my God, if this was transformed, this would really help me. And I would then focus on that area first. But if you're in a situation where you're feeling very overwhelmed or you really struggle with decluttering, I would start in the place that feels really easy. You know, for me, I think the bathroom's quite an easy one.
Okay.
Because toiletries and those sorts of things, memories aren't generally attached to them. It's a lot less sentimental. And you can be a little bit more logical and like, do I need 15 shampoos? Like, which ones gave me allergic reaction? Which ones didn't I like? And just go through and get rid of stuff. So start somewhere that feels easy if you feel completely overwhelmed, or start somewhere if you want like a, I need to get this done, start in a more difficult place. And I would give yourself double the amount of time you think that you need for whatever you're going to do.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it takes so much longer than you ever could think. And then there's another two options, because it depends on the type of person you are. The next thing is to decide whether you're going to give yourself a huge chunk of time, like a whole day, and you're going to get everything out and go through it all and put back everything you want to keep and, you know, take away your donations and rubbish and stuff. And you're going to do like a full on reset cleanse day. But for some people, the thought of having it all out in that messy middle where it's just like chaos and you're thinking, why did I ever do this?
Yeah.
Feels too overwhelming. Set yourself smaller little challenges of being like, I'm going to set a timer for 2 hours and I'm going to just tackle this cupboard and get everything out. Mm. So whether you're doing the big version or the small version, you want to just get everything out and put it into categories.
Okay.
So that you can see what you've got. Because let's say in a kitchen, you might not realize you've got 15 wooden spoons because they're all in different cupboards, and lots of people have got like 25 pairs of black leggings, but some are in the wardrobe, some are in the chest of drawers, and they don't realize there's 25 pairs. So by categorizing, you can see how many you have. And then you want to go category by category, making decisions on what you want to keep and let go of. So asking yourself questions like, when did I last use this? Mm. Is this something I'm going to use in the next 6 months? Where did it come from? Is, you know, do I really want this? You can ask yourself a huge, as many questions as you can to decide which way you want to go with it. And then if you want to keep it, just leave it in the pile and then have some bin bags ready for like recycle, rubbish and donate. And then maybe you want a sell pile as well. And then once you've done that, you can then reorganize back into the space. Some people want to add storage solutions and labels. Ultimately, the goal is to free up some storage so that you could then reuse that in different areas of your home and then reorganize things. It doesn't have to go exactly back where it was, because sometimes it's nice to think about, are the mugs actually near the kettle, or do I need my gym stuff closer to, you know, to be more accessible in a different area of my wardrobe. So thinking about that's a great opportunity to then change the space around to function better. And then you can reorganize and deal with your kind of waste, as you might call it.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because you touched on then like the different piles. And I think that's something I always struggle with, is like, having grown up in a real environmentalist family, I feel I don't want to throw anything away that has value. And I'm very aware that like a jumper that I won't wear because I don't like it might be, you know, it's 15 years old or whatever, but might be like somebody else's favorite jumper. Mm-hmm. There's a struggle now with, you know, Depop and Vinted, and it feels like there's so much stuff on there that it's hard to know, you know, what do I give away? What do I throw away? At what point do I have that bag of things that haven't sold on Depop and they've been there for 6 months? How do you go about like actually finding sustainable solutions to get rid of things?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And this is one of the reasons that people don't declutter, because it's like, I don't want to add to the waste.
Mm.
So there are things you can do to, like you say, try and sell it. And I always say, stick it up for whatever price you want to. And then if it, set yourself some rules, like if it doesn't sell within a month, I'm going to reduce the price. Mm. And then if it doesn't sell then I'm going to donate it, so that you're not ending up having all this stuff you're going to sell and it never sells and it's still sat in your home.
Yeah.
So give yourself some boundaries as to how long you're going to keep hold of something. We can't do anything about the stuff that we've already bought and the stuff we've already physically got.
Mm.
So it's about changing our mindset around our consumption moving forward that's ultimately going to make the biggest impact not only on our homes, but on the environment. So we might have made a mistake of buying a jumper and it didn't fit or it's itchy and I missed the return and, oh God, what am I going to do with it? Do the best that you can to find it a home that's suitable. Mm. But ultimately, take everything that you're decluttering as a lesson. You know, I didn't return it, whatever. Like, work out why and then try and make a change moving forward.
Mm. I think it is that thing that lots of people will recognise of sometimes when you're having a bad day or you're feeling a certain way that you kind of shop to make yourself feel better. And I used to do this thing actually where I'd write on my phone. If I wanted something, I'd write it on my phone and I'd have to like go back and order it. I wouldn't buy it at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, in a shop, I would never buy anything at the time because I'm so like choice averse. But online, I would be like, oh, I'll just buy it, send it back. And I started saying like, okay, I need to put like 2 weeks time between it.
Yeah.
And if it's still in the back of my head or if in my life I'm like, oh fuck, I still don't have those black leggings, I still need them for the gym or whatever, then I would go back and buy it. But 90% of the time, yeah, I'd forget. And yeah, even if I ordered it, I'd forget.
That's a really good thing to do. And I do the exact same thing, like screenshot it.
Mm.
Like, I'll be going through my screenshots delete and I'm like, why did I ever think I was going to buy that? But yeah, setting yourself. And that's why Amazon's got one-click checkout. It's to prevent you from having that moment of like, oh, where's my card? Oh, you know what? I don't actually need this. I can't be bothered. Like, that's why they've sped up the checkout process so quickly so that you don't have time to think. And like, checkout lines have other stuff in the checkout for you to be staring at and potentially buying so that you're not stood there thinking, oh, this queue's really long, I'm just not going to bother.
God, that's so true.
So that's why they have all these techniques. So yeah, like saying to yourself, I'm going to just hold off and see if I need it, is an amazing step of something you can be doing.
Mm.
Yeah, asking yourself as many questions as you can before purchasing. And also just being really self-aware of like, am I doing this because I'm feeling really down and rubbish at the moment? Because yeah, we all catch ourselves doing that when we're feeling rubbish or it's late at night and we're bored. It's just browsing. Browsing's like a really dangerous thing to do.
But I guess it's also being aware of how you're being manipulated, because I've heard people mentioning Temu. And
Temu, I met a man who came up to me after one of the talks that I did to tell me about the fact that he couldn't stop shopping on Temu, and my talk had evoked something within him to realise this. And after learning about the process of Temu having some sort of wheel where you can click on it and it offers you prizes and is kind of very gambling looking in terms of the same setup as a gambling website, I said to him, I think you might be addicted to it. And then it transpired that actually he used to have a gambling problem and he was addicted to gambling previously. Right. And he had replaced gambling with Temu. And so, yeah, they have certain setups so that you get stuff for free and you get money off when you spin a wheel or whatever it was. I'm not 100% sure, but all of these sites are set up. And when you see those banners saying like 20 minutes for the end of the sale, mm-hmm, and actually when those 20 minutes end, it just like resets. And they have, you know, people are paid so much money in marketing to come up with all of these ideas. So, and we see, I think it's 50 to like 200 adverts per day.
Yeah.
Whether that's out on the street, but also our phones, that's just constant adverts. So we are marketed to constantly and also from a really young age. So it's not like we're doing anything wrong or it's our fault. It's just being aware and just trying to think of how we can reprogram our minds to not be in this cycle of consumption.
Yeah. I love that as like a key takeout is, the only way you can not fall into this trap again is by changing how you consume and also being aware, because nobody wants to be manipulated, do they?
Mm. Like, and I also think when you're laying on a sun lounger, reading a book on a really in a really hot country, do you ever think to yourself like, oh, I just want a new handbag? Like, you don't. It's like when you're really stressed and you've been up late trying to finish a deadline and then you're scrolling and then you see something, you're like, oh, No, now I really want this handbag. It's very interesting how the way we're feeling shows what we end up buying and not buying and wanting.
Yeah. So I want to go into just a couple of end segments that we love to do. I normally do like looking forward 10 years and back 2 years, but for you, I wanted to ask a very specific question. What's one thing that you have held on to for far too long and why?
Well, I don't know if I'd say far too long because I still want to keep it. But when I was little, I got chicken pox and we were on holiday. It was me, my dad and my sister. And my dad stuck me, I think, in his T-shirt, like, because chicken pox is so itchy and you don't want anything tight to your skin. And he stuck me in a Simpsons men's like T-shirt. And I've just always kept it. And it's now got like holes under the armpits. I still wear it in bed and it's really, really thin now. And I still love it and I still wear it. So that's kind of like my one thing of, I think it's got a really nice memory for me, my dad looking after me with chicken pox. And yet, if someone came to declutter my home, they'd be like, this is disgusting, this has to go. And I'd be like, no, because this is why. So yeah, memory things are important for everyone.
I love
that's
that.
Mine.
Yeah, keep the things that make you feel something, but maybe the hundreds of cards that just say,
happy birthday,
get rid of them.
Yeah.
And what's one item that you've decluttered that you regret? Is there one?
No. There's been a couple of occasions where I've thought, oh, actually, I could have done with that. But the feeling's like fleeting. It'd be like, oh, that would have been, that top would have looked nice with those jeans if I'd had it still. And then I move on and I put a different top on. I would say this is one of the things people fear, like 99% of the stuff declutter, you will never remember and never want. And there'll be like 1%. And that's the bit that people are like, well, I once got rid of X, Y, and Z and I really regretted it. It's like 1% versus 99. So it's just, your majority of stuff you ever want, you're going to be able to get again. So
it's always a trade-off.
Yeah, I don't have anything I'm massive at.
And we're just going to end on this segment, yes or mess. So I'm going to ask you 5 rapid-fire questions and answer the yes if you think it's a good thing, mess if you're like, no, it's not about that. So the Marie Kondo does it spark joy method.
Mess.
Ooh. Okay, but tell us why, actually.
Because I think it's really difficult to be looking at a spatula and say, does this spark joy? Like, no, but it's practical. So it just doesn't work for everything. And also, everyone's emotions are very different. I find that a lot of men are very practical and then women can be quite emotional. And so like standing with a man being like, does this jumper spark joy? And it's just, I don't think it works for everyone. For some people, great, but I don't personally work in that way.
Fair. Timu.
Mess.
Memory boxes.
Yes.
Okay.
Small amount though.
Okay, yeah, there's caveats to it.
Yeah.
Keeping clothes in case they come back in style.
No, mess.
Okay. Well, I'm quite concerned because apparently skinny jeans are coming back in style. Oh. I actually do have them, but no way I'm going to fit into them anymore.
They've only been out for like a year.
Well, they're coming back. And the last one, annual spring cleaning.
Mess, because you should be like decluttering and sorting things out throughout the year, not just seasonally.
Fair. The constant decluttering.
Yeah, but if you kind of get yourself to a low level of consumption, it's not a constant massive declutter. It's just a maintenance. If stuff's coming in, stuff needs to be going out at all times.
Yeah, but get stuck in the cycle.
So the less it comes in, the easier life's going to be.
And then you won't have to rent a bloody storage unit, your janky old bike in. So.
And your empty boxes.
Terrifying. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
No,
joy.
Yeah. Spark joy.
Spark joy. Shannon will stay. She sparked joy.
Thank you.